another poem to begin. It's an excerpt from a Rumi poem, Mevlana Jalaluddin Rumi. Trust your wound to a teacher's surgery. Trust your wound to a teacher's surgery. Flies collect on a wound. They cover it, those flies of your self-protecting feelings, your love for what you think is yours. Let a teacher wave away the flies and put a plaster on the wound. Don't turn your head. Keep looking at the bandaged place. Keep looking at the bandaged place. That's where the light enters you. And don't believe for a moment that you're healing yourself. Keep looking at the bandaged place. That's where the light enters you. Dr. Rachel Naomi Rantman wrote a beautiful book of stories. I'm sure some of you are familiar with it, Kitchen Table Wisdom. So most of what I have to share with you this morning is one of the stories from that book, a story of breaking, and a breaking open. If you've already heard it, forgive me, but it's one that I think is worth hearing again. So I invite you to trust our wounds to her surgery today. She sets the scene like this. One of the angriest people I've ever worked with was a young man with osteogenic sarcoma of the right leg. He'd been a high school and college athlete, and until the time of his diagnosis, his life had been good. Beautiful women, fast cars, personal recognition. 2 weeks after his diagnosis, they had removed his right leg above the knee. This surgery, which saved his life, also ended his life. Playing ball was a thing of the past. And these days, she says, there are many sorts of self-destructive behaviors open to an angry man like this. He refused to return to school. He began to drink heavily, to use drugs, to alienate his former admirers and friends, to have one automobile accident after another. You know, I think heartbreak is probably too small a word for an experience like that. That devastating physical breaking of his body was heartbreaking, I'm sure, but somehow bigger than that, too, as it broke dreams and visions and identity. A soul-wrenching, a being-shattering break. And whether we ourselves have experienced such an extreme break, and I imagine that many of us have in one way or another, we all know that feeling of devastation. We've all touched the broken places in ourselves, in our families, in the world. So, before I continue with Dr. Remen's story, I want you to take out that blue insert, if you will. And you'll see on one side there's a little image of a broken heart. And if you need one, raise your hand. Kim graciously is here. If you need a pen also, raise your hand. You're going to need a pen in a second. So if you don't have one, raise your hand. Kim will bring one to you. Thanks, Kim. And so if you're willing, right here, there's one and then one in the back over there, Kim. So once you've got that out, write down, if you're willing, something that's broken your heart. Something that's broken your heart in your own life, in your family, something in the world. What's shaped your own jagged edges? What's shaped the cracks in your pot? If it's just a word or a phrase, if it's just a picture, So she, Dr. Remen, describes the first time the young man comes to her office. He was powerfully built and a handsome young man, profoundly self-oriented and isolated. At the beginning, he had the sort of rage that felt very familiar to me, filled with a sense of injustice and self-pity. He hated all the well people. In our second meeting, hoping to encourage him to show his feelings about himself, I gave him a drawing pad and asked him to draw a picture of his body. He drew a crude sketch of a vase, just an outline. Then running through the center of it, he drew a deep crack. He went over and over the crack with a black crayon, gritting his teeth and ripping the paper. He had tears in his eyes. They were tears of rage. It seemed to me, she says, that the drawing was a powerful statement of his pain and the finality of his loss. It was clear this broken vase could never hold water, could never function as a vase again. It hurt to watch. After he left, I folded the picture up and saved it. It seemed too important to throw away. What a visceral demonstration of that feeling of brokenness. And I think it's a pretty common human impulse to pull away in the face of pain like that, to offer a comforting pat, a word of consolation, or some sound advice. But Dr. Remen shares that her experience has led her to believe in the profound power of simple accompaniment. Just being with. It's this accompaniment that can be a profound spiritual practice in small group ministry, simply offering presence to listening to one another, without, in the Quaker teacher Parker Palmer's words, trying to fix, advise, save, or set each other straight. It's harder than we think, I think, to listen to somebody without fixing, advising, saving, or setting them straight. So she accompanied, and in time, she says, his anger began to change in subtle ways. He began one session by handing me an item torn from our local newspaper. It was an article about a motorcycle accident in which a young man had lost his leg. His doctors were quoted at length. I finished reading and looked up. "Those idiots don't know the first thing about it," he said furiously. Over the next month, he brought in more of these articles, some from the paper, some from magazines. A girl who'd been severely burned in a house fire. A boy whose hand had been partly destroyed in the explosion of his chemistry set. His reactions were always the same, a harsh judgment of the well-meaning efforts of doctors and parents. His anger about all these other young people began to occupy more and more of our session time. No one understood them. No one was there for them. No one really knew how to help them. He was still enraged, but it seemed to me, she writes, that underneath this anger, a concern for others was growing. Encouraged, I asked him if he wanted to do something about it. Caught by surprise, at first he said no. But just before he left, he asked me if I thought he could meet some of the others who suffered injuries like this. People came to our teaching hospital from all over the world, and the chances were good that there were some with the sorts of injuries that mattered to him. I said that thought it was quite possible that I'd look into it. "Do you want to do something about it? Do you want to do anything about it?" Okay, so this feels like an odd way to start talking about mission. It feels odd to me, and I imagine it's going to feel odd to some of you, but this is how I want to start our conversation about mission. So I'd like to invite us to begin with an enraged and injured boy with just a glimpse of the possibility that others might need him. You know, we came into this shared ministry together knowing that developing a clear and exciting sense of mission one of the focuses, one of the foci of our work together. And next week, the board will appoint a team to carry that work forward with me through the year. And while we will update some words on the page, get some clear, crisp language that we can use as a foundation for the shared ministry of the congregation, what might be most essential, I think, about the work on mission is that we feel it emerge from us with the fierce sense of necessity, the fierce sense of necessity that I imagine that boy felt, even through his no, when she asked, "Do you want to do anything about it?" What is most important about mission is that it matters, like those injuries mattered to this young man. Mission must matter to us, must speak to why we show up here, why it matters to prioritize this community in all the ways we do. It must speak to why this congregation matters to the world. Within a few weeks, he had begun to visit young people on the surgical ward whose problems were similar to his own. He came back from these visits full of stories, delighted to find that he could reach young people. He was often able to be of help when no one else could. After a while, he felt able to speak to parents and families, helping them to better understand, to know what was needed. The surgeons, delighted with the results of these visits, referred more and more people to join him. Some of the doctors had seen him play ball, and they began to spend a little time with him. And as he got to know them, his respect for them grew. Gradually, his anger faded. He developed a sort of ministry. Rachel writes, "I just watched and listened and appreciated." Frederick Buchner is a Presbyterian minister and a beautiful writer. And this man's story makes me think of a quote of his. I think you can hear the beautiful truth in it, whether you care much for the word God or not. And he writes, "The place God calls you to, the place God calls you to, the place we are called to, is the place where your deep gladness, where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. The place we're called to is where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. The place where brokenness becomes blessing. The place of true mission." I mentioned that my grandfather was also a Presbyterian minister. He served as a chaplain in the Air Force during World War II. He taught homiletics, preaching, just down the road in San Anselmo. He was married and had four daughters. One of his students once told me that he towered in the pulpit. And a couple weeks from now will be the anniversary of his death, of his murder, in 1979, before I was born. And he was murdered because, in addition to being a chaplain and a pastor and a preacher and a teacher and a husband and a father, he was gay. And a young man struggling with mental health, struggling with his own sexuality, picked up my grandfather in a gay bar and killed him, as he had other gay men as well. And the impact of that night, of that break, it rippled across generations of my family. The moment of that breaking, the weight of the silence about his sexuality, his wife, my grandmother, she wouldn't speak of his sexuality to the end of her days. It left irreparable cracks. This is part of the story of my family. "It's my favorite of all his stories," Dr. Remen continues, "concerned a visit to a young woman who had a tragic family history. Breast cancer had claimed the lives of her mother, her sister, and her cousin. Another sister was in chemotherapy. This last event had driven her into action. At 21, she took one of the only options open at that time. She had both her breasts removed surgically. He visited her on a hot midsummer day, wearing shorts, his artificial leg in full view, deep deeply depressed, she lay in bed with her eyes closed, refusing to look at him. He tried everything he knew to reach her, but without success. He said things to her that only another person with an altered body would dare to say. He made jokes. He even got angry. She did not respond. All the while, a radio was playing soft rock music. Frustrated, he finally stood, and in a last effort to get her attention, he unstrapped the harness of his artificial leg, let it drop to the floor with a loud thump. Startled, she opened her eyes and saw him for the first time. Encouraged, he began to hop around the room, snapping his fingers in time with the music and laughing out loud. After a moment, she burst out laughing. "Fella," she said, "if you can dance, maybe I can sing." This young woman became his friend and began to visit people in the hospital with him. She was in school and she encouraged him to return to school, to study psychology, and dream of carrying his work further. Eventually, she became his wife, a very different sort of person from the models and cheerleaders he had dated in the past. Vision. This theme we explore this month, vision with true power. Vision with true power emerges not from the intellect, but from visceral experience. Dancing the crippled dance, he challenged her imagination. "If you can dance, maybe I can sing." This kind of vision that lives in the imagination but begins with lived experience. It begins with the heart breaking open. This is the kind of vision that transforms lives and transforms our world. You know, an evolution has been taking place in our understanding of the role that reason and rationality play in how we live our lives. In recent years, philosophers and ethicists, others, but one I like in particular, Dwayne Cady, they've been pointing to the very limited role of what we classically think of as reason in how we orient our decision-making in our lives. Cady writes this. He says, "Formal reasoning happens within conceptual frameworks. Happens within these conceptual frameworks, but it cannot prove or provide those frameworks. Reason doesn't do that. Metaphor, allegory, parable, narrative, and life experience all reveal constructive visions that frame and guide our moral reason. A vase ripped by black crayon through the very page it was drawn upon becomes a man dancing on one leg for a woman who has lost both her breasts, and the result is new vision, is laughter, is a lasting love. It was before I ever knew my grandfather's story that I committed that first act of activism in fourth grade." And like I said, I don't know that my dictionary and learning the definitions changed anyone's mind, but I do think that seeing my broken heart maybe made a difference. Long before that, Dr. Remen ends the story, we ended our sessions together. In our final meeting, we were reviewing the way he had come, the sticking points and the turning points. I opened his chart and found the picture of the broken vase that he had drawn 2 years before. Unfolding it, I asked him if he remembered the drawing he had made of his body. He took it in his hands and held it for some time. "You know," he said, "it's not really finished." Surprised, I extended my basket of crayons toward him. Taking a yellow crayon, he began to draw lines radiating from the crack in the vase to the very edges of the page. Thick yellow lines. I watched, puzzled. He was smiling. Finally, he put his finger on the crack, looked at me and said softly, "This is where the light comes through." was legally recognized. 23 years after their commitment ceremony, 30 years after my grandfather died, the light shone through. The broken light of my grandfather's life shone through our lives into a world that he could not have dreamed was possible. What kind of world will our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren live in because of the light we shine from our own broken, open hearts? What may be possible that we don't even dare to dream of? So take that piece of paper again, if you will, that one you wrote on earlier. And turn it over to the side with the sunburst of possibility. And from that place of brokenheartedness, if it relates to what you wrote down earlier, great. If not, that's fine too. But from that place of breaking open, write down a dream, a vision, a possibility for this congregation, for this wider community. A vision of how our light might burst forth from the broken places you have seen. A few words, a phrase, an image, whatever your imagination calls forth is the right answer. If you're willing, just take a moment to do that. Continue writing as you like, as Milton plays, but after, you'll drop those pieces in the baskets, if you're willing. And if you're willing to put your name on them, I would love to be able to see them and to use them in some way as we move forward. Ring the bells that still can ring, sings Leonard Cohen. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in.